Hey y'all, you're listening to
Twisted Truth, a true crime podcast
brought to you by
Emily
and Alyssa.
Today I will be doing the case on Brian Cohey Jr. It's a new one. It happened in 2023 and there's going to be some listener discretion and I'll announce those before I play it. But it's a heavy one.
I don't think I've heard of it.
And that's great. It's a very wild case, and it's very graphic in one of these parts that I will be talking about, but I'll let y'all know before that happens. I'm going to play for y'all right now a 911 call that happened, and it's just going to jump right into it.
All
right. You're already going to be on your toes.
Yeah, because there's an arm. There's an arm, there's another arm, there's another one.
Parents have some concerns with some stuff they may have.
I saw this.
Yeah, I believe so.
And I came across
a human head and hands.
But you didn't.
No, funnily enough, okay, we'll replay that, but funnily enough, I saw this, and it came across my TikTok about 5 or 6 times, and I kept skipping it. And then finally, I watched the beginning police interview thing, but I never looked more into it.
Oh, that's
it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so I understand what's happening, but I have no idea what the whole thing is.
Okay.
911 is John. What's the address of emergency?
Hi, there is an emergency. I found something in my son's closet wrapped in a plastic bag.
Okay, what was it?
I think it's a human head.
It's a what?
I think it's a human head.
Why do you think it's that?
Because it looks like it's all an ear.
Is it bloody or is it like anything like that?
Can you just come? Do I have to take a picture and send it to you?
What's the address? Come? Is your son there now?
He just pulled up. We wanted to make sure he was here before we called.
How old is he?
19. He's had a little bit of a fascination with the morbid, but he was channeling it, I thought, into becoming a crime scene investigator, but not so much.
Do you think he's going to be cooperative with us?
I don't know. I don't think he'll be violent.
Okay.
Just came back from his friend's house.
Does he have any weapons in his room, or do you guys have any in the house?
I don't know. I think that he has a shotgun, but we can certainly remove it immediately before he gets in his room. He's out by the car now, so.
Is the bag still in the closet?
No, it's in my kitchen sink, and there's a secondary bag that I have not opened. It's currently covered with a towel.
And there's a second bag?
There's a second bag, though. I don't know what's in it. I didn't open it.
Oh, sorry. Did he take the second bag out of the closet?
I took the second bag out of the closet and put it in the sink.
Where's Brian now?
I think he's still out front.
And you're in the backyard now?
I am, yes, because I don't want him to hear me.
So that was the 911 call.
Yes. And that, yeah, I've listened to that, and I think when the police first came to the house, but after that, I know nothing.
Good. So, March 1st, 2001, police received a disturbing 911 call, which y'all had heard. Let's fast forward to the day before that 911 call at around 2 a.m. on Sunday. Emergency responders had gotten another 911 call on February 28th, 2021.
Okay.
19-year-old Brian Cohey Jr. had been having a difficult night. The officer arrived at the Blue Heron boat ramp, and it seemed as though Brian had backed his vehicle into the Colorado River.
Okay.
So, that's where that 911 call came from.
Did he call 911 or somebody else called?
His mother.
Oh, okay.
So it was just him at first. You know what? We'll just.
Okay.
After accidentally backing Brian's car into the river, he calls his parents for help. While at the boat ramp, officers speak to Brian's mother and Brian. Brian states that he was unable to sleep that night and had a lot on his mind, so he decided to just go for a drive. He finds himself at the Blue Heron boat ramp where there's a life jacket program that his father owns and decides to park and think. So I guess. It's not odd that he was there. I guess that he found that to be like a comforting area and unsuspicious. He had parked at an angle, leaving the rear end of the car facing the river. And when he decided that it was time to go, he tried to put the car in drive, and to his surprise, it did not move. He soon found himself sliding backwards into the Colorado River. Brian is still in the car at this point, but manages to escape and get back up to the shore. There was no report of any injuries and claims that he was just cold from having been submerged in the river. The officer takes Brian's story sincerely as a mistake and lets him go home to get dry.
Is this car just in the
it's
water?
It's still in the water. Like, it's so badly submerged, and at this point, it's 2 a.m. in the morning. Like,
oh, they can't see shit.
They can't see shit, yeah. And they called several tow truck companies, and
everyone was like, no thanks.
They're like, yeah, we don't have the, and plus it's February. in fucking Colorado, so it's freezing. And they're like, we don't have the right clothing to even do this. So it's a process on even trying to convince somebody to come out and if they'll help. So he went back home. His parents took him home to get dry. And it, like an hour has gone by and they end up back at the boat ramp without Brian. So they left Brian home. The parents came back to deal with everything. While the tow truck tries to fish out Brian's car, the parents soon return without Brian. At this point, an hour has gone by, and in the process of pulling the car out, the officers notice something rather alarming. So it's still not fully out of the water, but they're starting to make some progress with it, and more of the vehicle is now visible than it was before. When he informs Brian's mother that he believes it resembles blood, they call Brian regarding the concerning discovery. Brian's response seems to be shocking, as if it was a funny mishap. They ask him again if it was possible that maybe he had hurt himself and didn't notice due to adrenaline, but he responds no. He said that he had some red, what's the word I'm looking for? He does, like, you know, like, when people, like, do, like, makeup and stuff?
Oh, like fake blood or something?
Yes. He said that during, like, Halloween, he had some, like, fake prop blood and stuff like that, and it might have just spilt in the process of the truck falling, or the car falling into the river. The
police. So, they're pulling the car up and they're seeing blood in the water is what they're seeing?
They see, like, a smudge of red on the rear.
Oh, okay.
So, I'm assuming, I mean, it's probably going to be obviously still very dark, so can't tell if it's, like, protruding from the trunk, if it's just on the back or what. But he insists that he has no injuries, he's not hurt, and it's probably just from the paint that had spilt in the back of his truck. So the police go about the night and release the car to the Cohees. The next morning comes by and officers find themselves once again at the Blue Heron boat ramp. A homeless man named Warren Barnes has been reported missing. The woman who called in the report met with the officers at the boat ramp. She said she knows Warren because she owns Monica's Bridal downtown and she brings books to Warren. She had just seen him yesterday morning, so this was Sunday morning, and told him that she would return to see him the next day. And when Warren did not show up, she began to worry. So this lady, she said, like, continuously brings him books, and they've developed, like, a relationship. Mm-hmm. He's homeless, and whenever he did not show up, she began to worry, especially because
she'd just seen him the day before.
She had just seen him. Someone had just called Paper Ready, where he had worked, when his wallet was found. So I guess it's, I'm not sure what it was that he did.
The homeless guy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He did have a job, and it was, the company, or maybe the facility that he worked at was called People Ready, and he was employed there, and he was actually a very good coworker. Like, always showed up on time, if not early. He worked there for a couple of years, and so Monica had gotten a call from People Ready, and they said, you know, we found his wallet, somebody reported his wallet missing and brought it to us, and have you seen from, like, have you heard or seen from Warren? And she's like, no, I'm actually here where I usually meet him, and he's not here. And so they're like, okay, that's odd because he didn't show up for work today.
Okay.
So Monica said she had just given Warren yesterday $20 for beer, and it was missing on the wallet.
For beer?
Yes.
Okay.
The person who found Warren's wallet said that they discovered it right there along the boat ramp. So the person that initially found his wallet and gave it to People Ready said that they had discovered it along that boat ramp.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That Blue Heron boat ramp?
Yes. Okay. And Monica had said that was somewhere that Warren never went. Like, he'd never made it that deep down towards the boat ramp. He would always stay, like, at the what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't
know. Like, he never made it that close to the river.
To the water or whatever? Yeah, okay.
So People Ready had called Monica to see if she had seen or heard from Warren. Warren had worked at People Ready for 4 years, and he did not miss a day since he started. People Ready said that he was never late and even showed up early, so for him not to show up was a very big concern. Monica gives the officers a photo of Warren and hopes to help their search. The lady from the boat ramp Lost and Found said that it was the owner of the life jacket program that returned Warren's wallet.
That's that guy's dad. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Brian Cohee Sr. found Warren's wallet inside of Brian's car while he was cleaning it the day after they retrieved it from the water.
Okay.
Yes. When Brian Sr. tells his wife of his findings, she grows very suspicious and decides to peek around in Brian's room. When she looks in Brian's room, she makes a terrifying discovery and calls the police. Police arrive at the Cohees residence, and they see Brian Sr. and Brian Jr. outside waiting for police. Police said that they received a 911 call from Terry about something concerning they found in his room, which Brian responds. So, police are pulling up to the house.
Mm-hmm.
Brian and Brian's dad are at the end of the driveway, and the police are just like, hey, you know, we got a 911 call about something that's, you know, your mother's a little bit concerned about, and Brian does not beat around the bush. And
yeah, because they say, do you know what we're here for? And he said, yeah.
Yeah, I believe so. A human head and hands.
Yes.
Like, very chilling. Yeah, like,
that's the part that always kept showing up on my TikTok, that being said.
Uh-huh. So, at this point, police have not arrested Brian because they needed to verify the disturbing discovery first. So, Brian Sr. escorts Officer to the kitchen sink. It didn't take but 2 seconds for officers to confirm that there was, in fact, a human head in the Cohees sink, which...
Could you imagine being that mother going through your kid's room and then finding that? Oh, boy.
There's a lot of stuff that goes into the signs, which, good for her, she didn't, like...
try to
wait too long. Yeah, or, you know, not question him about it. Like, she was like...
Like the laundry family in the Petito case?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, not trying to protect her son, but very much very concerned. And, like, as you can tell from the 911 call, she did not address him at all about it. She was like, I found this shit. Y'all come here. Yeah. Like, I'm not fucking around. I'm not telling him what we're doing. Y'all need to come while he's here. So, they immediately take Brian into custody and place him in the back of the cop car. While in the cop car, Brian makes a remark. So, like, he's under arrest. A cop is now escorting him to the police station. And while she's driving, you can hear him say, it was under this bridge. And then she, like, doesn't say anything. Like, she doesn't comment on...
the police officer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She doesn't comment on anything, but you could tell it was him telling them where he had killed that person. When Brian and police arrive at the station, they place Brian in an interrogation room while they speak to Terry and Brian Sr. Terry explains to the investigators the events that took place Sunday night at the boat ramp. When Brian Sr. discovers the wallet, Terry begins to worry, so she goes to Brian's room to investigate. Brian Sr. found something even more alarming in his car, but did not tell his wife, but instead confronted Brian Jr. about it. Inside the glove box was a very large kitchen knife. He claims He calls People Ready and tells them he had found Warren's wallet. The People Ready were excited to hear his wallet had been found because Warren had not shown up to work that day. Brian claims he found it down at the boat ramp that Sunday night while he was parked, thinking and believed. So, he had asked his father, or his father came to Brian and said, look, I found this big fucking kitchen knife, and who the fuck is this Warren guy? Like,
so, when did this happen?
The next morning.
So, before they found the head?
Before they found the head.
Okay.
His dad was cleaning out the car and trying to see what they could salvage from it, since it was submerged in the Colorado River. And he said that he found Warren's wallet in the back seat and a big-ass knife in the glove box. And when he asked Brian about it, he said, I found it down at the boat ramp while I was thinking last night and just forgot to give it to you. And I have a knife in my glove box because I don't trust people.
Okay. Heather's got a big-ass fucking knife in her car.
But do you also have, like, a stranger's wallet in your car?
No. No, but she always used to keep it, like, right in between the seats, that if anything ever happened, she could easily whip it out.
What the heck's going on? Why am I getting dragged into this?
We're talking about your giant hunting knife.
Oh, that's currently in the camping box.
Yeah, but you don't have, like, a kitchen knife.
No, but this fucking thing, dude. I have a
police-grade baton.
I don't know. She's got some crazy-ass shit in her car, because she doesn't trust people.
Okay, well, I guess that's not that weird, but yeah, to discover... Okay, so just think about all the events that have happened within the 24 hours. Like, your son is being... His car's being pulled out of the Colorado River.
Mm-hmm.
You're cleaning it. There's fucking some random guy's wallet in the car. He's got a knife in the glove box. And it's just not, you know, he goes to his son and he's like, what is all of this? And he said that his son was like, I swear I don't know anybody named Warren. There's a kid I go to high school with that's name is Warren, but I don't know this guy. Mm-hmm. I just found the wallet. So like a parent, he believes him and he doesn't mention anything to his wife about it. The only thing he mentions to his wife was the wallet, okay, which led her to be like, I'll see about this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Make sure if he's not stealing. Like, I'm sure that was the only thing that went through her mind. Make sure he's not stealing stuff. Gonna go look for stolen items and then you find a head.
So Terry said while she was cleaning Brian's room, she had saw a Rubbermaid container in Brian's closet. She began digging through the container and saw a plastic bag stuffed inside a white trash bag. When she picked up the bag, she mentioned it was rather heavy, and when she tried to look inside, there was just maggots covering all of it.
Oh, God.
So she was like, I can't even see, like, what the root of the problem was. So she takes it to the trash. So she takes the trash bags, there's two of them, to the sink. And she was saying at this point, like, she thought it was just, like, moldy dishes, mm-hmm, like, roast dishes. And that's why she brought it to the sink, was so that if anything came out, it was already
contained.
Yeah. Yeah. So she ripped open the first layer and saw that there was old blood. So it's double wrapped.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said when she ripped open the final layer, she had saw Warren's head.
Mm.
After discovering the head, she was too afraid to open the second bag and that she had found in the
just
closet.
Same, dude.
And that's when she called her husband. She called her husband and she was like, you need to get the... Like, she didn't tell him what she saw. Mm-hmm. She just said, get the fuck here now, you know? When her husband arrived, that's when Terry decided to call 911. Mm. Investigators now joined Brian in the investigation room. Terry informs investigators that Brian is diagnosed with ADHD and autism. So Brian retells the story of what happened that Sunday night. So okay, he already knows he's caught. He's like, there's no point in hiding it.
Yes, the, like, literal evidence is in your mom's kitchen sink. Yes.
Yeah, so he was like, I'm going to tell y'all everything. So this is where listener discretion.
Oh, God. Okay. Can I not listen?
None of this is really going to have you wanting to ask any questions. He was pretty forthcoming, and you can tell he was rather excited about
it. To talk about
it. Yes, like, he was ready to relive everything, mm-hmm, and...
I'll just get my comfort stitch.
Yeah, he made very disturbing comments. He was very energetic, mm-hmm, and passionate.
Like how I talk about my favorite characters.
Yes, he was very much so, like, even referencing, like, serial killers. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, part of me is like, I want to take a nice girl out to dinner, and then part of me is like Ed Gein, where he's like, I want to see what her head looks like on a stick. You know, like, he is very, like, not hiding. He's mentioned that he's wanted to kill before, and he's had, like, very strong urges this past year. And even evidence on his computer shows things that he's, like, Googled. Like, how do people react to a home invasion? And, like, very disturbing shit. So you could tell this was all very premeditated, and he was very forthcoming about it. Like, he was not hiding the fact that this is what he wanted to do. He just never really got the opportunity until now. So Brian states that due to his bad depression, he decided to take a long drive. He drove for about an hour to an hour and a half when he drove under the bridge by the sheriff's office. There, he spots Warren. He grabs his knife and puts on three layers of gloves. He immediately begins to stab Warren in the neck and straddles while stabbing him multiple times. He described it as surprisingly easy. He didn't even break a sweat. He told investigators that he was growling and making animal noises during the attack.
He was, or Warren was?
He was.
Oh, okay. Like,
I don't, he never said why. He just said that he was making, like, growling animal noises and kept repeating the word stinky, gross, smelly, stinky, stinky.
Oh, hey.
Like, it was, I don't know. Okay. Clearly there's something psychologically going on up here. When he thinks Warren is completely lifeless, he strips Warren from his clothes and cuts open his stomach to see his guts, remarking they were very pink with a laugh. Also, side note, while making this wild discovery, Brian's mom runs a daycare, so imagine cleaning his room with a house full of kids that you daycare.
There were kids in the house when she found the heads?
There were kids at that house when she found that. And she calls all the parents and she tells them that we've had a family emergency and you need to come pick your children up. So Imagine those parents.
Hearing the news the next day.
Yes.
Oh man. God.
I could not. Like, I was thinking about that the whole time whenever I heard that she, like, the kids were actively in the house when she found that head and she had to call the parents. Like, that's why I don't trust daycares. I do not trust them. Yeah. Like, I... Mm-mm. Brian said he destroyed Warren's eyes by just stabbing them and then cut off his hands and put them in a Ziploc bag. He then starts to cut off his arms by the elbow and the shoulder joints.
All of this with a kitchen knife?
Yes.
How would you do that with the bones?
He made demonstrations.
Okay.
Pretty much took the knife and put pressure on the joint and then...
Okay, you know. Yep. I shouldn't have asked.
Then he starts throwing all of the dismembered arms around the area of the bridge. I don't know why.
All the dismembered arms?
Yeah.
Like, well, a hundred of them?
Well, he dismembered 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, dismembered pieces of the arms. Got it.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know why. Also, when he was stabbing his neck, it was pretty severely severed already. Mm-hmm. So he put the head into an old pizza box and then... He was like, okay, I've got the hands, I've got the head, and I'm gonna go home.
And he just left all the other pieces under the bridge?
Yeah, just sporadically thrown. Also, he was wearing a Michael Myers outfit.
Oh, creepy.
Because he associated his Halloween outfit with violence.
Okay.
So imagine being a homeless man under a bridge.
And you see Michael Myers come up with a knife. Dude.
I don't... When he got home, he hid the hands and the head in his room in that Rubbermaid container. He cleaned the knife and threw away the gloves in the trash can. The clothes he was wearing at the time of the murder was placed inside the washing machine, put on high, and washed twice. After hearing all of this, police go, you know, obviously to go find Warren's body, and it was described as a very gruesome scene with body parts scattered throughout the bridge.
Can't imagine nobody had come across that.
So it's... The way it looked was the only kind of traffic that would be down there would be either other homeless people or train tracks. Because it had, like, a, you know, like, several different rails that trains would pass through by. And then it had pillars. And behind that pillar was where Warren was sleeping. So even if somebody had came by, they wouldn't have seen anything. So at this point, they have the head, they have the hands... The body was missing.
I thought they found it.
When they went to the... Like, the torso to the legs was missing.
So it wasn't a part that was scattered at the bridge? Okay.
He literally just dismembered the arm pieces and then was throwing them around. But that's why he was at the boat ramp. He put Warren in the back of his trunk, and whenever he was going to back it in, he had said he had took the body out of the trunk... And started to push it down the river. And when he said that he couldn't see it anymore, he decided to get back in his car, start the car. And he, I guess he had parked too much of an, at an angle. So when he put it in drive, it wasn't going. It just rolled. He tried to fuck with the gears to try to get it to go. And that's when it rolled back. Mm-hmm. And fucking idiot.
Yeah.
So and I couldn't even, I don't know how police let it go that far. Like, you're saying that you see the blood on the back of the trunk, you, like, how does that go without notice? Like, how would that not, I mean, they strictly said it looks like blood.
Yeah.
Why would you not have it tested?
It was washed in the river. I imagine nothing would be testable.
Oh, maybe that's correct. But still.
Yeah, I mean, what?
Why not open up the trunk and be like, okay, well, let's verify that it was, like, can of paint that spilt.
Yeah.
Because then if there's just a bunch of blood, no can of paint, I'd be like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Hindsight, again.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... I mean, you could tell from the police video that I was watching, the parents were a good part in not making them making him look suspicious. You know what I mean? Like, it looked like they really wrote it off as just, like, a teenager mishap. Like,
okay.
Nothing out of the ordinary. Like, you admit you couldn't sleep, you couldn't drive, you parked.
Who in their right mind would think this teenager is dumping a body? I mean, that's not the first thing that goes through your mind when a teenager accidentally rolls down an embankment. I mean...
Yeah, but why would... I don't know. Throughout the whole thing while I was listening to it, like, why would he literally park on the boat ramp? Why not just park by the boat ramp?
You don't know, man.
Not actually down the
boat
ramp.
My son is about to be a full-fledged teenager, and I can tell you right now, he would fucking do some stupid-ass shit like that. Just because he would do some stupid-ass shit like that. Their mind's not right, boys. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But also, I mean, his parents were just like, you know, like, they were very embarrassed, you can tell. Yeah. So, with them being there, had it been just Brian, maybe they would have given him, like, more of, like, a third degree. Mm. Like, what were you actually doing? And, like, I don't know. I feel like the fact that his parents took charge on it, made sure the tow got done, and, like...
But, I mean, it did only take them, what, one day to actually get the truth? So...
Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing she went scavengering around, yeah, because he definitely had other plans. Like, he admitted, like, they were like, well, what were you gonna, like, why did you keep his hands and head? Like, what were you going to do with them? That? And he said that he has a three-rule, I forgot what it's called. He referred it to, like, a three-rule. It's, like, 3 days for the body to start smelling. 3 weeks for the body to seriously decompose, and then 3 years the body's a skeleton. So what he was going to do was take the hands and the head and put it in an empty paint container and, like, throw it in a ditch somewhere,
mm-hmm,
and just get rid of the evidence that way, because the body was already through the river.
Oh, he took the identifying parts.
Correct.
So, without those, if somebody had stumbled across the body, they wouldn't be able to identify who they were.
Yeah, so the body itself would have been useless.
Yeah.
And all the dismembered hands and stuff like that would have been...
That seems a bit overage. You don't really... If you're going to take the hands and the head, you don't really need to cut the arms into pieces, but I guess...
No, but he had some very sick thoughts. Yeah. He wanted to know, like... I mean, he even just admitted that he cut him open just to see what his guts would look like.
Which,
like,
that's a lot of people, serial killers, say that they want to see how the body works, and that's why they cut it open. They've got this weird fascination with seeing the inside of bodies.
Yeah, and I mean, he's very young.
Mm-hmm.
He's been struggling with... And, like, his friends were in... He was actually at his friend's house when the police were called.
Yeah, I heard that on the 911
call. So, they interviewed them, and they're like, did you know? And they're like, well, Brian's just a very morbid person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's just who he is, and we always, like... We're all very, like, weird people, too, but we never... I mean, we always joked about, you know, if anybody was to murder somebody, it would be Brian, mm-hmm, but we
would never thought it was real.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he made very disturbing comments, and he was... very morbid.
But so, I mean, me and you do that shit.
Yeah, but I don't talk about cutting up a dog and eating it.
Okay, no, you know, I didn't realize, like, that was the comments he was making.
Yeah, like, he was making very creepy comments.
Yeah, ew.
Not just, like, your typical infatuation with, like, murder, mm-hmm, and serial killers and just the overall, you know, mind and how it works and why people do things.
Yeah.
But he was, like... I mean, the shit he was Googling was just... I wish I wrote down more of the things that he Googled, because it was like, nobody in their right mind would Google this shit unless you were planning to do some shit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, Googling how do people react to a home invasion.
Yeah. But I could get Googling that specifically if you're writing, like, a crime novel, because I have Googled some weird-ass fucking shit while I was writing. That if someone were to look at
it,
they'd
be like, but you probably have, like, a book to back it up.
Well, yes.
He does not have a book. He has a head and human hands in his closet.
I have, like, a quarter of a book to back it up.
But yeah, he just admits that he was driving, and it was just the opportunity. Like, he said that typically nobody... He wanted to go for somebody that wasn't going to be missed.
Yeah.
Which is a, you know...
A buff. Boo on him, because everybody fucking missed him immediately. His work and that lady.
Yeah. Homeless or not, he was very missed, and people were very concerned. But he said that he just didn't want somebody that was going to be a high-risk miss. Like, it was either going to be a prostitute or a homeless person.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just wrong time, wrong place for that guy. So, mm-hmm. And he said that he just simply wanted to know what it felt like to kill somebody. Brian Cohey received a verdict of guilty and was sentenced to, quote, the rest of his natural life in prison plus 13.5 years without the possibility of parole.
13.5? That's so random.
Yeah, I don't know what that 13.5 was for.
That's just a random ass number to throw out there.
I mean, it also could have been whatever the state would allow you
to. Well, it's probably for tampering with evidence, mishandling, or miss something a body. There's something where it's something about if you cut up a dead body. I don't remember what it's specifically called, but there's something for that.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's the case on Brian Coheed Jr. It was not long because it all just...
It got solved right away.
It did. And thankfully, he was caught. He was cooperative. Mm-hmm. So you could, you know, everybody got the answers they were looking for. It just wasn't good answers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, at least they got him off the streets real fucking quick, man.
Yes, because I'm sure had he gotten away with it...
He would have killed more people.
He would have definitely killed more people. And just the passionate... The passion. The passion he had while describing this to investigators. Like, he was very excited. And yeah. It was very disturbing. So I know he probably would have killed more people. And I was just shocked. Like, I can't imagine being that mother. I don't know what I would do.
Yeah.
That was... a lot. And she's gonna have some fucking traumatic disorder. Like, she...
Oh, the mom?
To see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they had another son.
Yeah, I saw in the video of where the police came up to the house, the mom was catatonic on the grass in the front yard, and the other son comes out and the dad yells at him, "Go hug your mother," or something like that. Yeah.
I wonder how his brother was reacting. I'm sure his brother is probably very used to his, like, morbidness.
Yeah,
and
but
probably
you can't
not
be...
shocked about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but
at all.
Oh my god, like, I'm sorry. If my sister, well, I guess I wouldn't be very shocked if my sister came home.
I mean, I'll be honest, I've gotten fucking dishes out of my kid's room that was, like, moldy milk and shit, mm-hmm. but never have I ever, like, uncovered something with fucking maggots in it. Like, uh-huh. that.
Which, wild that there was maggots so fast if it was only one night in his closet.
Well, I know he used an old pizza box and stuff. I mean, who's to say how long that pizza box was in there? And then
that's true. It could have, the larva could have been in there. And mm-hmm. then, yeah. Gross.
Yeah. So, that is the case of Brian Coheed Jr. It was very disturbing. But I hope y'all enjoyed it. Thank you for listening to the Brian Coheed Jr. case on Twisted Truth, a true crime podcast.
Hosted by
Alyssa
and Emily. If there's a true crime case you wish to hear, email us at twistedtruthatcp@gmail.com. Until next time, stay curious, stay vigilant,
and never underestimate the power of the truth.